Welcome to Mount Podmore, a new political podcast from the Rapid City Journal. I'm Enterprise reporter Seth Tupper, and our guest for this episode is the Speaker of the South Dakota House of Representatives, Mark Mickelson, a Republican from Sioux Falls.
One, two, three.
So I want to talk about your ballot issues today that you've been working on, but before we jump into that, it seems to me that some of what you're doing now probably has flowed out of your decision not to run for governor. And so I just wanted to review that really quickly. And I was just curious, when you thought about that, you went so far along into fundraising for governor, running for governor, and then you decided not to do it. Was it that you didn't want to go through the race campaign to become governor, or you didn't want to be governor? What were your thoughts on that?
You know, it's always shades of gray, Seth, but I think for myself in the final analysis, I just concluded I didn't want the job bad enough on the terms it was available to me to accomplish what I thought was able to be accomplished, to go through the process of running and serving. It's a demanding job, and we do have a lot of wonderful statewide elected office holders in all regard, and I like to move pretty quick on stuff, and, you know, I guess it'd be fair to say sometimes some of my ideas don't fit squarely within the litmus test of some parts of the Republican Party, and if I see a need, I want to address it. And I did have a fair amount of political capital built up with a lot of connections around the state, and we just ended up seeing these, and there was no grand plan, but we see a couple things that we think are glaring needs that need to be addressed, and we're pretty energized going about doing it.
So have you ruled out running for higher office at any time in the future, or is this just a decision?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know what would change, Seth. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a certain element of kind of the greater good and civic service in my DNA. It always has been part of the way I've thought, and I think a lot of the members of my family. So, but there's lots of ways to do that, and you don't have to do it with a full-time commitment and give up everything that you've got in terms of business and a lot of family time. And you don't. I enjoy living in Sioux Falls, and I think I can help other good people, and I can also contribute. And I frankly love the South Dakota legislative process in this regard. It's part-time. You know, I can do everything that I am still doing and still contribute through what's effectively 2 months out of the year.
So, you know, deciding not to run for governor, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but just from afar, as I look at that decision and what you've been doing subsequently on some of these ballot issues, it does seem to me that maybe you've been somewhat liberated by that decision, if that's the right word.
It's a very good. It's very freeing. You know, I'm not worried about what, you know, Joe or Susie is thinking, you know, in terms of how it might affect, and particularly how it might affect me in a statewide primary race. I'm able to go out and just do what I think's right. And, you know, frankly, both the issues I'm working on happen to pull with 2/3 of the general public, 2/3 of the Republican Party, and they're you know, somewhat difficult issues, but they need to be addressed.
And so, why go to the ballot box? Of course, you're in a powerful position as Speaker of the House to move legislation. So why go to the ballot box for some of these issues instead of straight to the legislature?
Well, it's, you know, the power and the influence you have in the legislature is only to the extent that you can persuade and cajole your fellow legislators. And we had really good luck doing that with the first proposal that would limit or eliminate out-of-state groups from funding ballot measures in South Dakota. That passed the House with broad support. Well, my bill was a couple freshman legislators who brought the idea forward, and I commend it was Jordan Youngberg, a senator out of Madison, and Spencer Gosch, a freshman House member from Woolridge. And they brought this idea forward, and I ended up, after looking at it, thinking it was a good idea and co-sponsored their measure. But we got 50 votes out of 68 in the House. And my interpretation is the out-of-state groups that profit by being able to come in here and use South Dakota as a testing ground hired some lobbyists and were able to persuade enough senators on a committee or raise enough doubt that it died in the Senate committee. And so I don't know if it will meet a similar fate next session if those two gentlemen decide to bring that bill forward or someone else does. But when I saw 15 measures filed in May, many of which would propose to amend our Constitution, some political friends and I were talking. We just said, hey, we got to do something about this. And this is where we landed. If we cut off the out-of-state group's ability to fund ballot measures, I think they'll go screw around in Idaho or North Dakota or somewhere else.
What to you was the, when you look back at the ballot measures, what do you think was the most egregious example of out-of-state money coming into South Dakota that you thought was exerted undue influence on our process?
Well, there's five. I mean, you can't single them out. There were five out-of-state measures. They spent $9.5 million between them. 97% of the money was spent out of state or came from out of state. So you can pick IM-22, the quote unquote anti-corruption measure. And that was $1.6 million of out of state dough. You could pick open primaries. I think that's $2 or $3 million of out of state money. No, 80% of that money was out of state. You could pick that payday lender out of Georgia who spent $3 million trying to confuse voters over what was a true South Dakota initiated measure to cap payday loans. You could pick the Illinois unions and the Minnesota unions who came in here and tried to break our, you know, decades long history of being a very strong right to work state with a ballot measure. Or you could pick this fellow from California who thought some uniform law that wasn't very well written that got amended into our Constitution and he thinks it's a big success. It passes with 60% of the vote. No one spends a nickel against it or organizes. And it's called Victims' Right. And he thinks he declares that victory. Well, what's happened is in Pennington County, instead of sending out 20 notifications to the true victims of the violent crimes that really want to and need to participate in the process, they made it required, not optional. It applies to property crime victims as well as violent crimes, sex crimes, and domestic crimes. And it applies to any living family member of a victim. So they've gone to having to provide 500 notifications. It's drowning out the people that really need to get the notifications. And it's costing the taxpayers of Pennington County like $440,000.
And this is Marcy's Law, of course, that you're speaking of, correct?
Yeah, you got it, Marcy's Law.
On this issue of, and that is one of your ballot issues that we've been discussing, is to ban out-of-state contributions to ballot question committees in South Dakota, right? Is that oversimplifying it, or is that what the measure would do?
No, that's it. Exactly what it does.
And, of course, the research that some people have done on this has led them to say, well, this would not be constitutional. It would.
Who is someone?
Well, people I've read. My own research. My own research. I've read it in other stories as well. But
so you read something someone wrote on a blog. Now, Seth.
No, not on a blog. I've read the own.
I'm not picking on you.
No, but I've read the own LRC.
I am sick and tired of reading some knothead from some political group that doesn't have a law degree, presupposing he knows constitutional law, and asserting something that's in his own self-interest. Now, here's the difference between me and them. I've read the court cases. I hired a man who wrote an 80-page paper in his third-year law school on this very topic. Alaska has an out-of-state money ban that has been upheld. In fact, you might not know this, Seth, but you can't give more to Senator Thune any more than $5,600 in any six-year cycle. Now, that is a restriction of your free speech. But
right.
That's constitutional. You know why? Because the U.S. Supreme Court has determined there is a compelling state interest in a narrowly tailored solution to address the compelling state interest. So we already restrict free speech in the political environment.
But we don't ban people from Iowa giving money to Senator Thune in South Dakota. So
we don't, and maybe we could. I don't know, and I don't care, because that's not the issue. I've narrowly tailored the solution here to what I view as the problem. East Coast groups use states like South Dakota as a testing ground because we're an easy ballot to access. And we have relatively inexpensive media markets. So the issue is these people write sloppy laws, spend a couple $1 million on a measure, two of them pass, one's found by a judge to likely be unconstitutional, the other says, oops, We meant to write it opt-in, but we didn't. Never mind. We're sorry that it's crowding out the victims that you intended to help, and it's costing your counties a lot of money. And they think they're being victorious because no one spends a nickel against them and organizes. We have a problem. And the problem involves people using us as a testing ground. So I've narrowly tailored my solution to ban the out-of-state groups from participating in the ballot measure process in South Dakota. So I think, I've told the Attorney General, I said, listen, you deputize me, I'll argue the case. I think we win. Alaska's ban has been upheld. There is no federal, there is no U.S. Supreme Court holding on this issue. But for people to say, hey, this is unconstitutional. No, it's not. It's likely to be challenged. I think we win. I wouldn't be spending my time if I didn't think it would be upheld, I assure you. Spending my money and my time.
Well, we can certainly hear your passion on it. That's for sure. I appreciate that. Moving on from that issue, you have another ballot issue that would raise tobacco taxes. And I was wondering if you could tell us, just summarize for us what your motivation is there and what you want to do with the money.
So we fund the technical schools in South Dakota at the lowest level of the seven states that we surround. At the same time, Western Dakota Tech, right there in Rapid City, you know what their tuition is per credit hour?
I do not.
$230. Do you know what the tuition is in Sheridan, Wyoming, or in Montana, or in Nebraska?
No, sir, but I'm guessing you do.
$110 a credit hour.
Okay.
We're at $230 a credit hour. They're at $110. We fund a total amount less than them. When you count the tuition in, so we fund the lowest, we charge the most, and people in Rapid City might wonder, why in the world do we have a workforce problem?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to have to address that funding gap somehow. Most states have a real estate tax levy for their technical schools. We don't. And so to make up for it, we charge the kids double. And the tobacco tax is what I think is a palatable source of revenue to the general public in South Dakota to increase, and we're going to use it to lower the tuition at the technical schools, what is the third highest tuition in the country.
And what are the amounts you're looking at then? How much would taxes increase on?
Well, we're going to raise the tax on the tobacco by $1 a pack of cigarettes. The tax will apply to other tobacco products also. That is projected to raise by the state's budget office $30 million. And that's net of when people say, oh, now I'm going to drive to Wyoming or wherever, buy my cigarettes. So they've accounted for that number. We're going to take $20 million of that $30 million and send it to the technical school, the Board of Technical Education, the new board. That board will then distribute that money to four or five priorities that we've outlined, the first of which is tuition reduction, the second of which is scholarships, the third of which is programming enhancement. I don't know about out in Rapid City, but in Sioux Falls, in 2009, we cut our heavy equipment class. Those contractors now have to go to Sheldon, Iowa. In 2010, we cut six manufacturing classes. These are important classes, but they're expensive. Mm-hmm. And so we all talk about workforce development. We all talk about jobs. We all talk about economic development. But it's a lot more rewarding when you actually put some action behind it that would be significant. And I think this ballot measure will receive the support of the general public, if we can get it on the ballot.
You mentioned a lot of other states have this dedicated real estate tax, I think you said, for technical schools, but we don't.
That's right.
When I pay property taxes to the Rapid City School District, doesn't some of that money go to the technical school, to Western Dakota Tech?
No. Rapid City doesn't give Western Dakota anything. They charge Western Dakota for some of the services they provide. So if you look into it, Western Dakota, I'm going to guess, pays the Rapid City School District $100,000 a year for payroll and AP and providing certain services.
Mm-hmm.
But Western Dakota would, maybe originally when they started, they would have gotten the land from the school district. But there's no ongoing funding support coming from the Rapid City School District to Western Dakota.
And so our tech schools are just more dependent on tuition and fees than other states' tech schools are, or community colleges?
Well, yeah, we're the third most dependent on tuition fees. We have the third highest tuition and fees.
Huh. Another ballot.
It's a little understood area because you know, let's be honest, everyone loves technical schools, but they're kind of like the redheaded stepchild in state government. You know, the Board of Regents has their constituency group, the K-12 educators have their constituency group, and those folks really need to take care of number one, their priorities. And so the technical schools have been living on scraps for too long.
I've seen your name linked also to a possible ballot measure to force nonprofit advocacy groups to give money to South Dakota ballot question committees to reveal their top 50 donors. Is that something that you still expect to take to the ballot?
No, uh-uh. We decided to as money.
Okay.
So that's legislation I support. We brought it last session. It passed the House and it died in the Senate committee on a not very close vote. But yeah, so that one is something that I am a fan of. I support it. My goal is to shed more light on who's donating, but I'm perfectly happy just banning the out-of-state groups from coming in here and funding the ballot measures. And if we can get that passed, then someone else can carry that water.
And on Marcy's Law, which we discussed, which was a ballot issue in 2016, it sounds like you intend to support legislation to repeal that or to change it. What's your plan for
well,
that?
Well, we
got to
fix it. It's a mess how they wrote it. And I think if you talk to them behind closed doors, they'd tell you that. They meant to give the victims the right to opt into the notification obligations, but they didn't write it that way. And so most of the counties are providing notifications to all victims, whether they want it or not. And so that's really flooding out the system. So we got to fix that. And to fix that, we really need to repeal what was put in the Constitution and come back with some statutory language and just address it and write what they intended to write. And I use this as an opportunity to tell your listeners to say, you don't want initiated measures brought by out-of-state groups amending our Constitution. It's a bad way to make policy. You couldn't imagine amending the U.S. Constitution the same way. And we're going to probably need to look at that next session and take that away, or at least put the legislature back into the process of being a voice in the amending of the Constitution, you know, because most of the time we've had this initiated measure process in South Dakota, the public hasn't had the right to initiate a constitutional amendment. It's only in the last several decades that's been around.
Okay. With the little time we have left here, I just wanted to throw your wild card question. You know, you mentioned perhaps no further higher runs for statewide office for you. And you come from, as I mentioned in the introduction, a long line of people in your family being in public service, including two governors. And I saw that your wife, Cynthia, was recently elected to the Sioux Falls School Board. So who's the next Mickelson that's going to be in politics?
Who knows? Who's crazy enough? Well, the rest of my family members are sane enough.
so the disease is fading with the further generations.
I don't know. You know, let's be honest. Life's good, and Americans are content. I mean, you guys in the media try to go find some divisiveness, and you guys like to do that.
Our president does better at that
part,
than we do.
But if they can buy a can of beer and grill a burger on a Friday night, people are pretty happy. And so the big downfall to that, Seth, is we have come to take good government for granted. And that may be the downfall of us. I don't know. Over here in Sioux Falls, you know, where I spend most of my time, things are going great. You know, people are kind of rolling in the same direction for the most part. We don't get divided on the big issues. We believe kind of in a bigger pie is good for everyone. And so it's a fun place to be. And I've got enough business activity going in several of my business ventures, and I have enough political activity, as you can tell, in some issues that I care deeply about, you know, life's pretty good right now. And so I don't know what my wife's going to do. She's looking for some support on the school board to do some of the things that she thinks need to be done. And we do have a good school district here, and it's got a difficult job ahead of it with, you know, a number of single parent families and, some of the poverty levels that are coming into the Sioux Falls School District with the growth of Harrisburg to the south and Brandon to the east. So fortunately, we've got good leadership, good administrator, and a good culture at our school district.
All right. Well, on that note, I'll let you go. But thanks a lot for joining us for this episode.
Seth, good to talk to you. Good luck.
You bet. Thanks.
All right. See you. Bye.
See ya.
One, two, three.